and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Blah, 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 blah.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. Good morning to you all. How are you, Mark Riley? Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, Mark Maron.
Oh, isn't that nice? We're being nice to each other, saying hello to the country, hello to New York, hello, Kalo, the Costco, hello, on the board. What's going on, man?
What's going on, buddy?
I don't know, dude. Do you feel tired? You all right?
No, I feel good.
I'm fine. I woke up right on the bumper this morning. I woke up right as the alarm went off this morning.
I had some weird dreams, man.
Yeah, I know. You shared them with us earlier. I'm not sure you want to share them with us now.
You didn't share them with me.
Well, there's some fragments. Some fragments of dreams. I had this weird dream the other night where I tried to comb my hair back and I couldn't because it was kale. Like, it was literally the vegetable kale. My hair had become
cooked
kale.
Cooked or raw?
I believe cooked. Thanks for asking. It was cooked. I don't know what that one means. Then there was another one about a woman in my...
You're not going
I better wait for the dream diary for that one.
Maybe you better talk about who we got coming up today before that one cost you.
That was sort of a weird, dirty dream. I told my wife about it.
So she knows. So just tell it.
Confession. I told her about the dream because it involved some unidentified woman in the dream. I couldn't really make out who it was. That's the story I'm sticking with. And she was like just trying to goad me into having sex with her or something. She was just trying to. She got naked in front of me. She stood there and she was like, "Come on!" And I'm like, "No!" And then I started to get annoyed with her. Okay. And then I walk out of this room. I don't know what happened. There she is again, this naked woman. And my wife walks up and goes, "What's going on here?" And I'm like, "I had nothing to do with this. I had nothing to do with this. There's nothing going on here. She just got undressed and that's it. That's what happened. That was the whole dream."
In a weird premonition of what's going to happen at Bananas in Hasbrook Heights, June 25th.
Man, that's going to be great.
I'm sorry, Kayla. I cut you off, man. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. So she was an unidentified woman? What does that mean? You work with this person? No, I'm just asking.
You know, it's
going to hell, Chris LaPresto.
You got to be careful with identifying the women in your dreams to the women you're with because they will hold you responsible for your unconscious. Not know that? Do you not know that if it's got nothing to do with you, you're sleeping and so-and-so pops up in your dream? Right. Okay. But you make a choice. Do I tell my wife who so-and-so is in my dream or do I just let it be at that? An unidentified woman. And they go, "Well, who was it? I couldn't make out her face. It kept changing." You know, what do I got to say who it was for? So I got to sit there and she'll be like, "So why are you thinking about that?" I'm like, "I'm not thinking about it. I was dreaming about it." "Why are you dreaming about it?" "I have no control over that." "Fine. All right, so I got to deal with that? What do I got to deal with that for?" I almost had a meltdown over fruit salad yesterday. It was not a good day for me. I made this beautiful fruit salad day before yesterday, and I'm looking forward to eating some of it yesterday. And I pull it out, and I just taken the nap that I didn't want to take because my life is so difficult sometimes when I'm on these hours where you just like, "I want to have a day, but I can't keep my eyes open." And I went to sleep. I woke up, and I'm like, "At least I have fruit salad." Went into the kitchen. Spilled it all over the kitchen, all over the floor, and for some reason that was all it took for all of my hate from my childhood and every other element of my life to come out, and I just exploded. Blamed my wife because she was in the kitchen, and then walked back to the couch and thought about why my life was so difficult because there were melon balls on the floor. All right, how sad is that?
Did you cry?
Yeah, almost. I felt bad for blowing up. You shouldn't blow up like that. Let's blow up about things that are important. Let's not blow up about things that aren't important. Well, Terri Schiavo has been autopsied. She has been examined. Everything has been weighed. And it turns out that the religious right was wrong, Mark Riley. They were just wrong.
They were completely wrong. Bill Frist's digital diagnosis, the one that he got from looking at video of Terri Schiavo. And Bill Frist ought to know better because he is actually a doctor. But it turned out to be absolutely wrong.
See that? You expect a little integrity from doctors. You certainly don't expect any integrity from politicians. So on that on that level, he honors
who
he is.
Sorry, I forgot who we were talking about.
Her head, her brain weighed half of what it was supposed to, meaning her husband was right, as were the doctors, as was, this was confirmed by a pathologist who did the autopsy when he said about the brain damage, quote, "It was irrecoverable and no amount of treatment or rehabilitation could have reversed it." She wouldn't have been able to eat or drink. Even if they had poured it into her mouth, she probably would have asphyxiated. She died of dehydration. And given the damage to her brain in a certain region, she was almost certainly blind. So the whole idea that she was smiling or talking or even looking at people that were insisting that this person was capable of these things and capable of recovery was wrong. And now apparently some of the right is saying, well, it's not about that. It was about life. It was about life. No, it was all about that. It was about the religious right and the politicians that got on board trying to characterize a woman who was severely compromised to the point of almost being dead, you know, just being a batch of organic operations that were happening despite the fact that she had no consciousness.
You know what was most infuriating about this to me, Mark?
Hmm.
There was no evidence of the abuse that either her parents or many of her supporters alleged her husband inflicted on her.
That's right.
People forget. They had this man, Michael Schiavo, virtually as some kind of a serial assaulter against this woman.
This is a guy that became a nurse to take care of his wife for like 15 years. The Schindlers, Terry Schiavo's parents, if they're making new rooms in hell, if you believe that kind of stuff, there's going to be one with their name on it for blaming this guy for making accusations and in retrospect weren't true. And
yep.
Then, you know, exploiting, you know, the horrendously compromised condition of their daughter to pander to politicians and create a attempted martyrdom by religious fanatics is heinous. Special room in hell for the Schindlers.
You know, the religious right won't give this up. Mark, they are in such deep denial. Some people say that, you know, the autopsy was fixed. I want to know. Other opinion. Some of them are saying, no, it really wasn't about all that. Some people are saying, Tom DeLay and them are saying, well, you know, we saw her eyes move. She must have been able to see. I mean, they're just...
Tom DeLay made a comment today. He hasn't made a comment today, has he?
I think he did make a comment.
He hasn't said anything for weeks, that guy. He's submerged in some sort of, trying to hide from people throwing accusations and rocks and busy reorganizing, congressional committees so he'll never take responsibility for anything. Speaking of, this is an interesting thing that's been happening all week, is that the GOP, Republicans within the party, are starting to sort of turn on the neocon death cult agenda. And this couldn't be more clear than the House voting down Bush's efforts to expand the provisions of the Patriot Act, 238 to 187, Riley. This means a lot of Republicans voted with Democrats. These are conservatives worried, concerned about government intrusion, which was once a tenet of conservatism. Bush has threatened to veto any measure that he sees as weakening the act. One of the provisions was regarding bookstores and library records. And you asked me on the break, you're like, I wonder if any FBI guys were at the Strand.
Well, look, it's not outside the realm of possibility.
That's true.
I mean, they wanted the authorization to go into life, and they had a complete, you know, justification, I guess, as far as they were concerned, as to why this was needed. Remember, these are the same provisions, several of them, that Alberto Gonzalez, our attorney general, was lobbying most vigorously to keep in the Patriot Act.
Yeah. Well, you know, Gerald Nadler, who we've had on the show many times, basically said that, look, if some terrorist, I'll quote Gerald Nadler in response to these provisions, quote, if some terrorist checks out a book about how to make an atomic bomb, that might be legitimate for the government to know, and they can get a search warrant or a subpoena the way we've done it throughout American history. Otherwise, what you're reading is none of the government's business, end quote.
Yeah, and, you know, this government was fully and remains fully prepared to intrude on what you read, to go to places like the Strand or Borders. Don't think just because you go to Barnes & Noble that you're safe from this kind of intrusion.
Yeah, also, let's talk about senators. Isn't it good to know, dig this, Bush's tax cuts make a bunch of rich senators even richer. Isn't it good to know that your tax money is paying them and you'll be carrying the bulk of their tax burden just because you don't have enough money to hide it? You
they
know
got
what I mean?
Blind trust, man. Frist has got a blind trust that has a capital value of between $5 million and $25 million. What is that? You know, that's five times itself. $25 million is five times $5 million. I wonder what makes the difference, you know, between $5 million and $25 million.
He's also got $15,000 of stock in Krispy Kreme donuts. That's a heart surgeon. He don't
wow.
care.
Wow.
It's like, hey, look, it's more for me. Maybe I'll make some money off the investment and some clogged arteries. I can, you know, throw a few new hearts in if they can afford it.
John Corzine did well.
John Corzine owns the world. What is up with that guy? What's he got, like $100 million? He was a Goldman Sachs guy?
Yeah, well, he's about to spend a whole bunch of it trying to become governor of New Jersey, by the
way. How much is he going to spend, though?
He spent $60 million on getting elected senator. He may spend more than that. Him and Mike Bloomberg, the mayor of New York City.
When we, coming up next, we'll talk about, what the Alabama senator said as to why they couldn't show up for that apology for the not putting lynching laws and anti-lynching laws into
effect.
We'll see what they had to say. That's coming up next. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. It's 16 past the hour.
Morning. Coffee, please.
You're listening to Morning Sedition.
It's all our fault.
Call us at 866-303-2270.
Yeah, whatever.
That's 866-303-2270.
It's going to be fun.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Enjoy.
Support our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. Operation Truth. We were there.
Paid for by Operation Truth, Incorporated.
Twenty past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Thanks for listening. Coming up in a few minutes, we've got Dr. Maron's movie reviews. Hadn't talked to the old man in a few weeks, actually. Got a few movie reviews out of him. As promised, I wanted to tell you why U.S. Senators Richard Shelby and Jeff Sessions from Alabama were not among the 80 senators who co-sponsored the legislation of apologizing for not passing anti-lynching laws before.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Well, Shelby said he did not remember anyone asking him to co-sponsor. And Sessions' press secretary, Mike Bruma, said Sessions does not endorse everything that crosses his desk. But the senator said in a statement that he backs the resolution. What is that?
That's called covering your butt politically when you are exposed. And see, the interesting thing is, Bill Frist, who must be, these guys in the Senate must think he's a complete idiot by now. He was supposed to have provided the cover for these guys by not allowing an individual vote and instead having a voice vote.
Oh, that's good. You know, to have to pander to constituents that still believe that they don't owe an apology for the more than 4,700 people who were lynched between 1882 and 1968, most of the victims being black, according to the Tuskegee University Archives. 347 lynchings in Alabama during that period alone. But these guys, hey, you know, I didn't hear about it.
Yeah, and those were, by the way, 347 murders that were in the main never solved.
Oh, so let's dig on this here. A new Gallup poll finds nearly 6 in 10 Americans say the United States should withdraw some or all of its troops from Iraq. In the poll, 56% say the war in Iraq wasn't worth it. The top reasons cited are fraudulent claims and no weapons of mass destruction found, the number of people killed and wounded, and the belief that Iraq posed no threat to the United States. Well, that is spreading, my friends. There's dissent in the ranks around the war, Republicans and Democrats alike. We talked to Russell Feingold yesterday, and he has introduced a Senate measure calling on Bush to lay out an exit strategy. We talked to him yesterday about his trip to Iraq. Can we hear that, Chris, number two?
We were in the green zone, wearing flak jackets and helmets in the green zone just to go to meetings. This is in the protected zone. I remember asking one of the generals there, I said, you know, how are things going after the election? He goes, well, you know, things are stable. We only have 50 to 60 attacks a day. And, you know, this was good news. And, of course, it's gotten much worse since then.
It's horrendous. Yesterday had the highest one-day death toll in Iraq in the last 3 weeks. More than 50 people were killed. But more than 50 people.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
One suicide bomber strapped with 100 pounds of explosives blew himself up inside a supposedly secure area and killed 26 Iraqi soldiers, 26 more wounded.
5 U.S. Marines killed by a roadside bomb near Ramadi. 1 U.S. sailor killed in combat in Ramadi. 8 Iraqi police officers and 2 civilians killed by a suicide bomber in eastern Baghdad. It's just unbelievable. 47 American soldiers were killed in the first 15 days of June, putting this month on pace to be the deadliest month for U.S. soldiers since January. There are widespread food shortages that have left many ordinary Iraqis starving. Families in Baghdad haven't received sugar or baby milk since January. Some shipments of rice have contained maggots, and shipments of tea and flour have contained metal filings. And guess what, George Bush? Somewhere, living somewhat safely in Afghanistan or Pakistan, Osama bin Laden and Mullah Omar are resting comfortably. It's horrendous. And now, you know, active duty officers are saying the military action will not end the insurgency. I mean, Republicans, you know, like Representative Walter Jones from North Carolina and Representative Ron Jones of Texas are signing on to a resolution similar to Russ Feingold's.
Well, yeah, because it is getting to the point where these members of Congress are realizing, hey, this guy got himself reelected. He doesn't have to face voters again. I, as an elected representative, Congress or Senate, sooner or later are going to have to face voters again. And remember, Walter Jones from North Carolina is the guy that coined the phrase freedom
prize.
That's
right.
So he's no SDF guy we're
talking
about.
That's right. And John Conyers is going to be on C-SPAN after, you know, I'm not going to take any responsibility. Maybe we help rally.
Go ahead, man. Take some responsibility.
Well, no, we rallied with some people to call C-SPAN to make sure that Conyers' forum on the Downing Street memos now take place on TV. And now there were rumors that I heard that we haven't been able to confirm that he actually was able to move back into the Capitol. Yesterday it was reported that he was going to be at the Democratic National Committee offices, but I heard rumors. I can't validate them. It's there's a blog pulse.
Yes.
That perhaps he's been allowed into the Capitol, but that we couldn't get any information from his website.
No.
But that would be exciting to know if anyone's got the definitive evidence of that he will be allowed back into the Capitol building after James Sensenbrenner, heir to the Kleenex fortune, pushed him out, the big baby.
Yeah, and now C-SPAN's website is saying that they will be carrying this on C-SPAN 3 beginning at 2:30 this afternoon. This is a meeting on the Downing Street memo, which suddenly, Mark Maron, has taken off in the media like one of those bottle rockets that you light up on the 4th of July or something.
How do you like that? Isn't that interesting? That all of a sudden, there's been some reports of a wide range of critics, including the ombudsman of the New York Times and Washington Post, say the press bobbled the ball on the Downing Street memo. That's from media critic Howard Kurtz today. Yeah. So now all of a sudden, we're supposed to think they're great because they're admitting that they screwed up, and now some people are saying that because of the screw-up, it mobilized the left. It got everybody so pissed off that they actually sort of created a momentum, and now it's demanding attention. And at least as we were talking about yesterday, that means it's going to get out there into the collective unconscious, and people are going to start to realize people were sitting on the fence. People were disillusioned because they're going broke, and they're realizing their president and this administration doesn't care about them, is going to start to do the math in their brain saying, wow, maybe this is BS.
Yeah, our main man Lou Dobbs took time out from worrying about Mexicans to talk about the Downing Street memo. This is amazing. This is absolutely amazing. We got to get Lou back on again.
I tell you, every time we mention that in a funny way, we get like one email going, hey, you guys are really wrong about Lou Dobbs. It's important what he's talking about. Yeah, but it's also funny. He acts like he's doing a show from the Alamo.
Yeah, really.
So, coming up next, we got Dr. Maron's movie reviews, and we got, the Christo-Fascist Zombie Brigade is taking some hits. They have officially been declared a hate group.
Yeah.
It's about time. All that and more on Air America Radio's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark. Coming up, 27 past the hour.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
And Mike and Mike. Don't miss the next Kyle Jason show, y'all. Saturday night at 10 p.m. on Air America Radio.
Yeah, hey, what's up? I have it. Yeah, I have it. I bet you're wondering out there what I have. I can't tell you. I have the
Maris
time.
Got it. You got it.
It's 34 past the hour. You're listening to Air America's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey, folks.
I'll tell you, the off-mic show at this place, that particular segment wouldn't have been that interesting, but I do have it. We'll be broadcasting live from the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn next Friday, June 24th. We're going to have a lot of giveaways. We're going to have a lot of great guests. We're going to be joined by DMC and Gifford Miller. Stay tuned for details on that. I will be performing at Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey on Saturday, June 25th. Go to bananascomedyclub.com for ticket info. Also, folks, we're raising money to send any inner city kids to summer camp. You can change the life of a kid in the South Bronx. $35 sponsors a morning hike for 15 kids. $75 sponsors an afternoon of camp activities for 30 kids. And $350 sponsors 1 week at camp for a child, a whole child. Go to morningsedition.com and click on Air America Radio for Air America. What am I doing? Go to MorningSedition.com and click on Camp Air America. Wow, I just had a major brain skid, my friends. Hey, folks, here we go. We haven't done this for a while, and with the summer movie season heating up, we figured it was time to get some... Oh, boy. I'm in
trouble.
It'll be all right. We figured it was time to get some reviews on the summer's hottest movies from someone who's seen all the latest titles. Unfortunately, he doesn't really know he's reviewing movies for us. And on top of that, he's my father. Here now is the phone conversation I secretly recorded with Morning Sedition's resident movie reviewer, my dad, in a segment we like to call Dr. Marin's Movies.
Hello.
Hey, Dad.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good. Where are you?
We're in the car. Let me get out of the car for a minute. Hold on.
Uh-oh. This can't be good. Why is he getting out of the car? I guess it's not running.
Hi, Margaret.
Who the hell's Margaret?
I need to close this. Right.
Car? You don't know how to close the door of a car?
This.
What?
It's something I...
who's Margaret and what couldn't you close there?
It's Rosie's sister. She's going with us. She goes to the dentist in El Paso.
Where are you now? Are you at a gas station?
No, we're driving. I'm sitting in the back seat. Rosie's driving.
Oh, you're driving. All right. So did you see this Cinderella Man?
Yes.
What do you think of that?
I like that. It's a heart-rending story, and when you know it's a true story, it makes it a little more interesting to me. We saw Layer Cake, which I thought was so sorry.
What is it? What's it about? I didn't see it. Someone recommended it to me. I never saw it. I never heard of it.
It's English actors. It's an English production, and it's about crime. It's about drugs and crime and the middleman.
Yeah.
And how the middleman was supposed to be the hero of this thing, and then doesn't end up that way.
What about the Star Wars?
No, I don't see them.
You didn't see it at all?
No, I've never gone to them. I've never enjoyed the special effects like Matrix and all that sort of stuff. I just never enjoyed that.
What about this Brad Pitt movie?
That's a good movie. I mean, it starts to get into the special effects stuff.
That you don't like?
No, but it's an interesting story, and it was nice to hear her interviewed about it. You know, Jolene, she sort of disowns her father and doesn't talk to him anymore.
What does that have to do with the movie?
Well, she's been responsible, apparently, for the breakup of Brad Pitt and Aniston. All this intrigue of love triangles in Hollywood.
It made the movie better?
No.
Oh, so you don't think they had sex or anything before he left Jennifer Aniston? Come on.
Well, what can I tell you? I can only tell you what I heard. But that's how you convict a child molester and how you let off questionable people like Wacko Jacko.
We didn't talk about it very much. I guess the jury did its job. I mean, it was a pretty flimsy case. I mean, he's obviously a weirdo. I don't know. I assume that he did it.
Yeah, but I think what you take away from that is that on the insider's track, he might do these things, but he doesn't do them maliciously as a predator. He's just, eccentric type of guy, juvenile mentality.
You mean he might sleep with kids as opposed to have sex with them?
Yeah.
Right.
That's what I took away from it.
Oh, okay.
How's everything else?
Everything's pretty good.
Enjoy yourself.
Thank you, too.
All right. Take care, babe.
Bye. All right, there you go. So to sum it up, here's the deal on some of the hot summer movies. Cinderella Man is a heart-rending story because you know it's true. Layer Cake is so-so for an English production, and something about a middleman, I don't know, I couldn't understand what he was talking about. Mr. and Mrs. Smith starts to get into that special effects stuff, but it's an interesting story, and it's nice to hear about Angelina Jolie's personal life. And Michael Jackson might do some questionable things, but not maliciously, like a predator.
Yeah.
So there
like
you
a
go.
Predator.
My dad's on the pulse. No one can say that my dad's not on the pulse of what's going on in the world. Well, dig this. This is about time. It's about time that the Southern Poverty Law Center declare the Family Research Council, the Focus on Family, all the Christo-fascist zombie brigades, fake fronts of family values. They are now been officially declared hate groups by the Southern Poverty Law Center. And it seems to me that's a long time coming, Riley.
Well, the Southern Poverty Law Center does not generally deal with issues regarding the gay community, something that even Tony Perkins points out in his Family Research Council rebuttal to their report, Holy War, which was done by Bob Moser, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But
great piece.
Yeah,
great piece.
It's a great piece because what it does is go back to the very beginnings of this evangelical hate movement against gays and chronicles direct quotes from each and every one of the participants, from Anita Bryant through to Tony Perkins.
Starts with Jerry Falwell, you know, yeah. And some people extrapolating from the old man on the mountain, that guy Rush Dooney, who created the Dominion Christian Movement, the Reconstructionists. These are people, mind you, not just anti-gay, but there is definitely a subtext of real KKK-type racism at the core of a lot of these groups. I mean, some of the Dominionists, some of the Reconstructionists are people that believe that America was at its best in the antebellum South, was at its best, and they want nothing more than to create a country that is based on biblical law and separation of the races.
Absolutely. Jerry Falwell started out by opposing, of all things, the 1964 Civil Rights Act, based on the notion that God did not want ministers to get involved in politics. Now, this from a man who, by the way, several years later, 15 years later, put both feet into politics.
And the reason that I think that they, you know, they're so, yeah, obviously I believe that they should be a hate group, because let's be honest, many of these mega churches are just anti-American, corporatized, fascist bureaucracies of hate, just giant hate factories. But they don't think they're being hating. They think they're being righteous. And that's the scariest thing. And the way they have demonized gays through their language, in the Christo-Fascist Zombie Brigade symbolism, the gay represents what the Jew represented in Nazi Germany. And the unborn represent what the Aryan ideal represented in Nazi Germany. These are symbols that they use to mobilize people's hatred and to get grassroots organizations moving to obliterate anybody that doesn't believe in what they believe in. I think that I believe it is a very organized and very real fascist movement, personally.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And Tony Perkins, as we said the other day, paid David Duke, an ex-KKK Grand Imperial poopah, they paid him like 80-some-odd thousand dollars in, I guess, what was it, 1986, I think, for his list.
For a mailing list, yeah.
For a mailing list of white supremacists, of racists. I mean, so let's not deny what's going on here in any way, that whatever these guys are thinking, they want to own politicians, and people like Bill Frist and people like Tom DeLay are willing to pander to what is definitely a fascist factor, a faction within our culture that wants to create a theocracy and wants to own these politicians. Like, make no mistake about that, my friends.
Absolutely. And Tony Perkins realizes the gravity of an organization like the Southern Poverty Law Center, who have been responsible over time for reinvestigations into some of the murders of African Americans, that prominent African Americans like Medgar Evers and others. This is not an organization without some gravitas. And when they call you a hate group, when they call you extreme, and when they document it by quote after quote after quote from leading figures in this thing, Anita Bryant, Dobson himself.
I'd almost forgotten about Anita Bryant, because I'm so tapped into the pulse of this new Christo-fascism again, and wondering about the history of the Dominion Christians, that when I was reading this piece by Mosher, I was like, oh, yeah, of course I remember that when I was a kid.
Well, see, this is where the Southern Poverty Law Center went to go, and then went forward from there and chronicled each and every wrinkle in the evangelicals movement, hate movement, against gay people. And see, this kind of thing is not without consequence, Mark, because we're hearing in other parts of the world, for example, over in Spain, where you've got a conservative party with a conservative group of gays in it, they're now threatening to out people.
That's pretty. That's an amazing
great story.
Thing.
Right?
I mean, yeah, they should do that here. They could that the gays in Spain's main opposition party could reveal the names of homosexuals in its rank unless the party backs down from opposition to gay marriage. That's a tactic that has been used to some degree in with some success here, but not in a big way, because, groups like the Log Cabin Republicans, they're more concerned a lot of times about their political lives than about, really representing the gay community, I believe.
Absolutely, in many instances. But see, what this is, they're saying, look, you cannot be a hypocrite in this situation and be gay and then speak out and vote against gay marriage. They're saying, and this is a direct quote, actually, from this organization, the Popular Party, the opposition party.
Yeah.
We are willing to say you, so-and-so, are a hypocrite because you are voting to impede a law that we believe is just and will mean more democracy, more equality, more tolerance, and more greatness for the Kingdom of Spain.
Nice. We're coming up, we're going to talk about the U.S. Catholic bishops had a semi-annual meeting, which is going to actually begin tomorrow. And they're kind of pushing the whole homosexual issue aside. But, you know, they're pretty frank. There's some spokespeople that are pretty frank about the, you know, about homosexuals within the ranks of the priesthood and about how, we know they're here. We know. But can we talk about something else? We'll get into that next. It's 45 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Charles Barkley. When I want to get caught up on the world events and I can't get in touch with Shaq, MJ, Larry, or Manute Bol, I turn to Mark Maron and Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Y'all ready for this? You wait for 30 days. Call now, 1-800-900-2657. That's 1-800-900-2657.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hiya.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Time to pull out the machine. I'm not even going to bother with this intro. The iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator is here with us, and sometimes it's hard to understand what's really going on underneath those headlines, so let's kick up the machine and feed it some headlines. From the New York Times.
Ladies and gentlemen, I wish it was TV, because Barry just looked at the thing and said, shut up!
Wait a minute. Here we go. Every time I'm going to start, I'm like, oh, wait, Brendan has some physics going, dee, 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 dee. From the New York Times, lawyers fought U.S. move to curb tobacco penalty. Lawyers fought U.S. move to curb tobacco penalty. Bush officials enjoyed the smooth, relaxing taste of corruption. From Detroit Press, of Detroit Free Press, autopsy says Shivo was not treatable. Autopsy says Shivo was not treatable. Translation, Bill Frist says Shivo's feeding tube should have included a 24-hour Jesus drip. From CNN, red meat fuels bowel cancer risk. Wow. Red meat fuels bowel cancer risk. Translation, 1 billion angry cow ghosts high-hoof each other in heaven. Well, that's kind of, you can picture that in a cartoony kind of way.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to be talking about cows and mad cow later. I mean, I think this is like the biggest cover-up that's gone on since in my lifetime. We're going to get into that later in the show. We got a guest to sort of parse the information coming out.
Yeah, you got a lot of juice on this one.
Dude, I'm freaking out about it. I'm just happy I quit eating meat a few months ago. So these bishops, U.S. Catholic bishops, will have their semi-annual meeting, which begins tomorrow. They're obviously not going to, you know, admit to having or allowing gay priests into the priesthood. And as you were just talking about before, that cost them the sexual. This has nothing to do with being gay, but the pedophilia on behalf of the priest cost the church what?
$1 billion.
But, you know, this is interesting. Catholic University professor Dean Hoag, an advisor to the document that has to do with, you know, how they are assessing gays within the priesthood, says, quote, there are persons in the Vatican who have decided we should exclude homosexual men from seminaries in the United States. But the idea of excluding men with a homosexual orientation is impossible. If you ask a man and he refuses to answer, what are you going to do? The general feeling is that if a man is chaste, celibate, responsible, and relates well, we don't care if he has a same-sex attraction or not. That's my view. All right. And then he goes on to say, quote, are there homosexual men in the priesthood? Absolutely. Are they good priests? Absolutely. Enforcing this is like enforcing the Rio Grande as a border between the United States and Mexico. You can't build a wall high enough. End quote. So in some weird way, you know, obviously they know what's going on, and that there is, it would be interesting, but will never happen if the Catholic Church accepted it.
Well, see, there are a lot of things that flow from that statement that you just read, Mark.
Mm-hmm. Right?
We ought to start from the position that the Catholics are not exactly, you know, taking waiting list applications for the priesthood at this point. They're, you know, they've faced a shortage, just like the military is facing a shortage of soldiers.
Uh-huh.
Now, at issue here, and what this guy is speaking to, is the question of whether or not someone who might otherwise in another situation actually be gay.
Yeah.
Can they become priests, and can they uphold the vow of, you know, assuming they uphold the vow of celibacy, is there a problem with the fact that they are attracted to people of the same sex? That's yeah. what is at issue here. And they're saying now that estimates of the percentage of people studying for the priesthood in that situation range from 25 to 50%, almost half.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how does the Catholic Church reconcile its teachings against homosexuality with the fact that more and more, nah, we shouldn't even say more and more, but that there is a component of their priesthood, good priests, people who do their job, people who uphold their vows, who have an attraction mm-hmm. for people of the same sex? How do you deal with it?
Yeah.
How do you deal with that contradiction? It is a religious contradiction against the reality of who's in the priesthood.
Well, usually I think in the Catholic Church they just use denial, which is within the text of the Catholic Church. So dig this. Wireless equipment maker L.M. Erickson and Napster, the online music distributor, are launching a digital service for mobile phones. Now, Bill Gates called this. I'm glad I haven't bought an iPod. You know, this. You know, Motorola plans to launch a cell phone that can buy and play songs from Apple Computer, from iTunes.
Yeah.
I mean, this is where it's all going. This is it's very interesting. It's all going to be on one thing. You'll be able to watch TV, take pictures, listen to your favorite music, make phone calls. All you never have to. You know, it's right there in your hand.
Well, you know, there used to be this spiritual. It was called. He's got the whole world in his hands, and I'm beginning to think that's pretty much what people are going to have in a little while. They'll be able to download some, although there is not yet a proven delivery market for all of this technology. It hasn't happened yet, and people are banking on the idea that, hey, they would want that kind of ease of operation. I don't know. I mean, you know, Chris Lopresto over here, the iPod king, may not be quick to take to this technology.
Chris, I tell you, I'm thinking that if it was on my phone, I would probably use it if it was on my phone.
It reminds me of one of those you ever go and buy one of those fax machines / copier /
I have one of those,
thing. Yeah, does it ever break on you? Does
no, it hasn't. Well, not this one.
All right, well, the ones I used to work for were a piece of crap. And like, I'm thinking,
but how hard?
Exactly what this thing is going to
do. Oh, come on. How hard could it be? It's just digital technology to put that in. I just think that, like, pretty soon you're going to need, like, a tool belt for all the different stuff you go out. You know, pretty soon you'll have your jetpack and your iPod and your phone and your television and where you work hanging off your pants.
Everyone will be Batman with a utility belt.
Uh-oh. Yeah! That sounds great!
Grappling hook on one end.
Oh, I can barely get out of the house the way it is. You know what I mean? Could you imagine?
Well, you have to shut the door 15 times.
No, today it was the door. Yeah, it's either the door or the stove. Today it was the door 3 times. You know, but imagine that with a tool belt, you know, and then the things I'm going to have to remember with that. Wow, that would be ridiculous. Terry Schiavo's autopsy showed that she had half a brain. Less than half a brain in her head was possibly blind. If she were force-fed the way that people were planning to, or forced liquids, she might have choked.
Yep.
Basically, you know, the religious right was wrong. Her parents were wrong. They were wrong to accuse her husband of abusing her, because the autopsy also showed that that was probably not true. We'll get into a little bit more of that coming up. We've also got
Mad Cow.
We've got Mad Cow, a guest, to talk about that. It's a good show today. You really should hang out. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark. It's 57 past the hour. Six past the hour, it's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Yeah.
You're listening to Air America Radio. Folks, how are you? We're raising money to send inner-city kids to summer camp. You can change the life of a kid in the South Bronx. $35 sponsors a morning hike for 15 kids. $75 sponsors an afternoon of camp activities for 30 kids. And $350 sponsors a whole week at camp for one kid. Go to morningsedition.com and click on Camp Air America for details. I'm Mark Maron, as you know, and I will be performing live at Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey, on Saturday, June 25th. Go to BananasComedyClub.com for ticket info. The entire show We'll be broadcasting live from Key Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn, next Friday. That's June 24th.
Yeah.
We've got tons of giveaways. DMC.
Rap legend.
Yes, of Run DMC fame will be there. New York City Council Speaker Gifford Miller will be there. You can go to morningsedition.com for details on that. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are some highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. There you go. A meeting of U.S. bishops will avoid the issue of gay priests. A spokesman for the bishops said, sure, we're avoiding the whole gay issue, but then that's how most families get through Thanksgiving. The meeting hopes to sidestep gay priests, something altar boys have been trying to do for generations. Bishops will not only sidestep the homosexual issue, but they will wave their hand and give it two snaps. Alabama's two senators say they did not co-sponsor the anti-lynching resolution because they did not know about it. Senator Richard Shelby's press secretary said the senator supports the resolution, even though he was in the minority of senators who were not co-sponsors, which he emphasized is not the kind of minority that gets lynched. Senator Shelby said he did not remember anyone asking him to co-sponsor the bill, and I can hear perfectly when I'm not wearing my hood. Those are your Morning Sedition Cliff Notes for today. Terri Schiavo, her autopsy was performed, and it showed a severely compromised, shriveled brain, less than half the size of normal human beings' brain. Meaning her husband was right, as were the doctors, and as was the pathologist when he said the autopsy proved that, quote, it was irrecoverable and no amount of treatment or rehabilitation would have reversed it. So that means the religious right in their horrendous taking advantage of this woman, and also the political arm of the religious right, Bill and his big gamble of superseding states' rights and trying to jam the federal government into that feeding tube was also wrong. And you would expect a little more from a doctor, wouldn't you?
You would expect a little bit more from a doctor, but the doctor that performed this autopsy developed 274 total images of Terri Schiavo's body.
Mm.
So this is not something that they did in some slipshod manner. They began this autopsy the day after she died. And even with all of this evidence, it's almost like one of those, who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes?
Yep.
Here is the documented evidence, and still you have people among the religious right, among the political right, who are in total denial about this.
Yeah, and you get to her parents, the Schindlers, who have been blaming Michael Schiavo for 15 years. This is a guy who became a nurse to take care of his ailing wife, and was trying to honor her will. And her parents, letting the religious right exploit their daughter. They were exploiting their daughter. There's a special place in hell for the Schindlers if a hell exists, because let me tell you something. It proves that there's the autopsy ruled out or at least diminished the possibility that she went into a coma as a result of strangulation or beatings or a drug overdose, or even an eating disorder or heart defect. Apparently, they're speculating that she might have been too newly thin. She just recently lost a lot of weight,
yeah,
and perhaps had too much coffee. That could have been one reason her potassium levels were so low, or it could have been a result of the epinephrine, which was used to revive her in the ER. But bottom line is, Bill Frist and many other Republicans failed as a representative of the people when he tried to get the federal government involved in his pandering to anti-American religious extremists.
He ought to be ashamed of himself. But, Mark, there also ought to be some scrutiny of the fact that this autopsy showed that the reason that everybody thought she went into the coma in the first place may not have even been true.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know now,
yep,
what caused her to lapse into this state. They really have no idea. And there ought to be some level of medical research to find that out. Lost in all of this discussion about whether a tube should be inserted or should be taken out and all of that is exactly what caused her to end up this way.
And, of course, the religious right said it was never about what we're talking about. It was about the culture of life. And, and that's just not true. It was always about this. It was always about people saying, she's talking. Look, she's looking at us. Look, she can speak. I can hear her saying things. She had less than half a brain in her head, and there was a 99% chance that she was blind because of her brain damage. So there you go. Sad story that was exploited by fanatic extremists, anti-American religious, the Crystal Fascist Zombie Brigade. Moving on, a lot of GOP representatives, state representatives and senators are starting to panic because George Lame Duck Bush is starting to stink a little to them, and they're trying to distance themselves because their constituents are starting to smell the BS. Yes.
Wow. You know how fast things change, Mark. What has it been, 7 months?
This is on Iraq. It's on Social Security.
Yeah.
Hopefully they're starting to wake up to how they're being screwed on bankruptcy legislation, how they're being taken advantage of in terms of a tort reform, restricting victims' rights if they're ever hurt by a corporation. Their ability to sue that corporation has become increasingly limited by this administration. Any number of things.
Well, and the tax breaks that they structured so that the wealthiest group of people in this country could make out like bandits is starting to be exposed, as is the lie that George Bush told during the campaign when he said that his tax cuts would benefit the middle class.
That's
and
right.
They have not benefited the middle class.
But I think most importantly, outside of the economy, which is the number one issue, is that a new Gallup poll finds nearly 6 in 10 Americans say the United States should withdraw some or all of its troops from Iraq. And that's happening, you know, many Republican Senate and congressional leaders, and so and Russ Feingold, who we had on the
yes.
show, putting a resolution in place to try to get an exit strategy, which they never had. If we could, I'd like to listen to Rod Nordland, who
yeah.
is a Baghdad bureau chief for Newsweek for 2 years, and he was just leaving Baghdad, and we asked him some questions about the future of Iraq.
There wasn't a plan in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
They kept talking about, you know, we have a plan. There is a plan. In fact, there never was a plan, and not one that was in any kind of form they could implement. And there isn't an exit strategy beyond training the Iraqi forces until they get to the point where they can actually take over. But that may be many, many years. And that, I guess, is what amounts to our exit strategy, but it's not much of one.
Is there anything changing on the ground there that you can see that could provide, you know, any hope or any progress in terms of either the people in Iraq or rebuilding or anything?
No.
So dig this. General Donald Alston, the chief U.S. military spokesman in Iraq, said last week, quote, "I think the more accurate way to approach this right now is to concede that this insurgency is not going to be settled. The terrorists and the terrorism in Iraq is not going to be settled through military options or military operations. It's going to be settled in the political process," end quote. Lieutenant Colonel Frederick P. Wellman, who works with the task force overseeing the training of Iraqi security troops, this is their one hope. This is the thing that they're hanging the whole thing on, is to train these troops. And many people say it could take years. He says, quote, "We can't kill them all. When I kill one, I create 3, end quote. So wait, America is waking up to the reality that this war, this idea that George Bush had, that he'd put into place, you know, many years ago. John Conyers is convening a forum on the Downing Street memo later on today.
Yes, on C-SPAN 3 at 2:30 this afternoon, Congressman Conyers, who we think may be doing this actually in a committee room. We're not sure about this because Sensenbrenner, the congressman from Wisconsin who chairs the Judiciary Committee, has been trying to keep him out by the Washington Monument someplace to hold these meetings.
Right, but I think what we can say is not only did the administration lie, not only is this devious business, and not only are they cutting and running after making a fortune. Like, the one thing that you know as a person is that the neocon death cult, they don't care about people. These guys made a fortune for themselves and for their cronies.
Absolutely.
Off of this war and off of the legislation they put into place to deny regular Americans their rights, their freedoms, and a decent living, you know? And so all I'm saying is that it hasn't made us safer. Russell Feingold has introduced a Senate measure calling on Bush to lay out an exit strategy. A similar action is requested by the guy who came up with Freedom Fries, a guy who, you know, who was so gung-ho. You know,
Walter Jones
of North Carolina, Representative Ron Jones of Texas has signed on to his similar resolution. It's just amazing how the tides are turning. I just hope that not only do people wake up not to the realities around the lies and the horrors of what's going on in Iraq, but the lies and the horrors of some of the legislation that this administration put into place.
You wait until people wake up to the fact that this economy has been stagnant for the last several years. And it's a direct result of prosecuting this war in Iraq. We are pouring money into a sinkhole, ladies and gentlemen, and it could go into the building of America.
And I'll tell you, you know, the corporate sympathies that this administration has, this administration doesn't care about individuals. It cares about the rights of corporations to do anything they want at the cost of human lives and the cost of our environment. And I'm starting to smell a huge rat with this one mad cow case that has been revealed.
Yeah.
I think there's more. I think it's a cover-up on behalf of the USDA and the meat industry. I think that, you know, our guest, who's going to be here today, John Stauber, co-author of Mad Cow USA, is going to, you know, get us up to speed on this thing, because I think this thing is going to explode. We're going to get into that next. 16 past the hour, you're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Rob Corddry from The Daily Show, here to remind you that when top news reporters and investigative journalists like me want their news skewed so far to the left it's wearing a dress, we turn to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
Your vision is too important. For your free video, call 1-800-774-1683. That's 1-800-774-1683.
Twenty-one past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. You know, I tell you, this mad cow thing drives me crazy. It drives me crazy because, you know, we went through a period there where I hadn't heard about it. Now there's a cow that they say had it, a downer cow, an older cow that had been tested in November with some kind of test that was inconclusive, but they didn't kill the cow then. They kept it alive. Now it's dead. It didn't enter the food cycle, but they're sending part of its brain to England to be tested, and that's going to take 2 weeks. And now you've got one of the guys at the Agriculture Department, Agriculture Secretary Mike Johans, a few days ago said, this is a situation where the firewalls work. We don't have a human health risk. The animal did not enter the food chain. This animal never got near the food or feed chain, basically saying it's okay. I don't buy it. I just don't buy it. I don't know whose fault it is. I don't know if it's the USDA. I don't know if it's the meat industry. I don't know if it's the FDA. But I know this stuff is here. I can feel it. My dad's been saying it for years. You know, we had a case a few years back. That was reported. It was, and they were very quick to point out, hey, it was a Canadian cow, it was a dairy cow, it wasn't a beef cow. But after that, the entire world went into a freak out. You know, they couldn't export beef. Japan said, we can't import any more beef. No. They've had 20 cases in Japan over the last few years, but they have a very much more in-depth testing facility and testing system. I mean, it just seems to me, I've done some reading about the meat industry here, it just seems like it's crazy trying to meet a certain standard in terms of productivity, and it's just a round the clock, you know, butchering, and it's almost impossible to effectively monitor, that's the word I'm looking for. And dig this, we get this email, you know, I started talking about this for a few days ago, and you know, I'm not trying to cause panic in everybody, but you know, it's sort of like any other virus, you know, but it's not a virus, it's prions, and it comes from cows eating cows in one form or another, which in some areas, I think in England, they don't do it at all anymore.
No, they stopped doing it. And why would anybody think that feeding cows cow bones, cow blood, chicken crap?
They make it into meal.
I know, but how is that supposed to be healthy?
It's cost effective. What do they care about health? They're just trying to fatten these cows up and giving them enough antibiotics to get them out of get them down the pike without its cost effectiveness, I believe. We got a guest coming on, John Stauber, who was co-author of Mad Cow USA. He's going to clear this stuff up for me, and one of the things I want him to clear up is that I got an email here. Now, the disease that comes from the human version of mad cow disease is Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, and I got an email here that says, my grandfather died of Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, the human form of mad cow, in 1992. Mm. 1992. Now, we haven't heard anything about mad cow in this country before 2003 that I know of. You know, 1992. At first, doctors had no idea what was wrong with him. He started showing symptoms close to that of Alzheimer's. In April of that year, he was diagnosed in July and passed by September. Because the disease was so rare and even the doctors were hitting the books, my family began looking into the causes of CJD, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. No one determined where he picked up CJD. My mother met another woman whose mother had died, who had had CJD at the same time. And this woman only lived about 15 minutes from where my grandfather lived, and we thought the odds were a bit scary. Only one in a million get CJD. So what are the chances that two people will have it in a 10-mile radius? None of the women in my family eat beef with good reason. Also, I tried to donate blood, but it was told I couldn't because I knew someone with CJD. All right, so either they know about more about it than they say, or they don't know anything about it but won't research it because it could hurt many important American industries. See, dig that. That's 1992.
Yeah.
And they knew enough about the thing not to take blood from this guy. So there is a general health threat out there. So if this was going on in 1992, I mean, this cover-up could be the biggest news story, can be the biggest, you know, this is sort of like the Pinto. This is sort of like the beef industry on some level. I don't know who's responsible for it, is acting in the same way as those people that the corporations, the auto corporations, are saying, look, let's just hedge our bets. You know, how much could it cost?
Well, see, this is the thing, Mark. You know, big beef has a very potent lobbying position,
huge
lobbying operation, and they don't take kindly to people publicly questioning whether or not their stuff is safe. Remember what happened to Oprah Winfrey when there was some question about the safety of eating beef. They took the woman to court. Now, she won, but still it cost her a whole bunch of money. And Big Beef, of course, they got lawyers on retainer. And what you see happening here, as you very correctly point out, is profit is being put ahead of human health.
And they know that the incubation period of disease is years, and that the symptoms look almost identical to Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
Almost identical. And I don't want to say that the Big Beef or corporations could be insidious, but they could be insidious. I think this thing is about to blow, and I'm looking forward to talking to John Stauber, a co-author of Mad Cow USA, to get into the minutiae of this stuff. He's going to be with us coming up next.
Yeah, because, folks, again, we don't want to be alarmists here. I don't eat red meat, so it doesn't make that much difference to me. But you do want to make sure that the food that you eat is safe. And, you know, there have been over the last decade or so a number of people who've begun to question exactly how the beef industry and, to be honest, other industries that produce meat for the American people, how they function, how do they operate, are they really safe?
Even the timeline is convoluted. It reeks of what do you call it, of stonewalling or a smokescreen, where they're sort of like, we got this one cow. You're talking about millions of cows in this country that are going through the slaughterhouse every day. We found the one cow with the one symptoms of the disease. We've got to send his brain to England to see if it seems like stalling to me. It sounds like a cover-up to me.
Sounds like due process, I guess. I don't know. But I do know this. I saw a picture of that cow that had mad cow disease. It was scary to see. We're going to get into this more next here on Air America Radio.
Listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Mainstream media, to the extent that they have any will to do that, they're afraid to challenge.
The Majority Report on Air America Radio.
And now, the Morning Sedition Radio Theater Company players bring you their production of Mark Maron and the Temple of Doom.
In his last adventure, Private Eye Mark Maron and his stereotypical lesbian assistant, Grace, narrowly escaped capture by angry evangelicals after trying to pass themselves off as members of the faithful. When who should come to the rescue? Mark's Christian ally, News Daddy.
News Daddy, what are you doing here?
I was just in a 40-city love tour with the Reverend Al Sharpton here.
Good afternoon to you today.
Hallelujah!
Whoa, who are all those people?
That's my holy posse. They travel with me everywhere.
How did he manage to fit them all in the van?
God owes the Reverend a solid, so he bent the laws of physics.
Mark, I hear you're looking for the Antichrist. God has also instructed News Daddy and me to seek out this instrument of the apocalypse.
Really? Did he also appear to you in the form of Johnny Carson?
No, he was off that week. We got a substitute God. I think it was Burke Convey.
Hi-o!
But you must have been straight up tripping, Mark, trying to fool those evangelicals. Now they know you're sniffing out their territory, and they're sure to send out a goon to pop a cap in your ass. Pardon my language, Reverend.
No problem.
Does your posse ever stop doing that?
No.
All I'm saying, Mark, is to watch your back. Be careful about anybody trying to lay a trap for you.
Got it. Hang on. It's my cell phone. Hello?
Mr. Maron, my name is Federico. If you want to find the Antichrist, go to the back entrance of 174.5 Q Street. Come through the alley. Arrive at midnight. Tell no one where you are going.
Hey, thanks. Grace and I gotta go. I just got a tip on the Antichrist.
Mark, have you heard a thing I've said? This sounds like just the kind of jive trap I was talking about.
No, nothing like that. Some guy I've never met named Frederico just says the Antichrist is in the back of some building in a strange part of town at midnight.
You're an idiot!
Well, see you guys. I got a really good feeling about this.
10 minutes after midnight, Grace and I were tied to chairs in the back of the building on Q Street.
Boy, I didn't see this coming.
Good afternoon, Mr. Maron. Glad you and your homosexual lady friend could join my party.
Wait a minute. You look familiar. Haven't I seen crudely drawn caricatures of you in the Air America radio studios?
Probably. I'm anti-abortion leader Randall Terry, founder of Operation Rescue. We defend life in all its precious forms, no matter how small or how young. All life is precious. Now I'm going to blow you up.
Pardon?
Don't you recognize this building? It's a Planned Parenthood office. I tricked you into coming in through the back door so you wouldn't recognize where you've dragged all your girlfriends for abortions.
Actually, I don't think I've ever been party to an abortion.
Well, surely your lesbo friend can recognize a baby slaughterhouse.
My lifestyle has kind of kept me out of the loop on this one.
No matter. All life is precious. So I planted a time bomb in this examination table. On your way to hell, give my regards to all those babies you killed.
But I never did any...
Ta-ta!
Can Mark and Grace get out in time? Will Mark go to hell, or has he been there all this time anyway? And even though Mark never visited that Planned Parenthood office for an abortion, will he remember that he went there once to ask if he could use a condom 3 years after the expiration date? Find out next week when we hear Mark say...
I wonder when Federico is showing up.
That's next week on Mark Maron and the Temple of Doom. And stay tuned later for the Morning Sedition Radio Theater Company Players presentation of Mark Maron's Home Shopping Channel.
We know our listeners want souvenir items from the show, so we're selling a beautiful 24-inch color TV set straight from Dan Pashman's apartment. Only $12.95, or make me your best offer. All right, this next item is an iPod with a selection of Wayne Gilman's favorite songs. Call now and you'll get a free...
Hey, Mark, have you seen my iPod?
No.
Oh, okay. Stuff keeps disappearing on me.
Okay, next item. We're selling this beautiful Emmy Award inscribed to our writer, Kent Jones.
Maron, you son of a bitch. Give me back my Emmy. Now.
That's coming up later on Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
There you go. 38 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'll be performing live at Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey on Saturday, June 25th. Go to bananascomedyclub.com for info. Folks, we've been talking about mad cow disease. It's back in the news. There's a case, a suspected case, first discovered last November, has been sent to England for further tests. It could take 2 weeks. We want to know if the Bush administration is doing enough to ensure that infected beef doesn't enter the marketplace. John Stauber is the co-author, along with Sheldon Rampton, of Mad Cow USA. He joins us now on the phone from Madison, Wisconsin. Good morning, John. John?
Hello, Mark. I'm here. Sorry for this bad phone line.
Oh, that's okay.
Good morning, John.
Let me ask you something, man. I'm starting to panic a little bit. I just got an email from a guy that says his grandfather died of CJD in 1992, along with somebody who lived like 15 miles from them. Is mad cow here? Has it been here? What are we dealing with, John?
Well, yeah, we know now that mad cow disease is here in North America. It's been here for a decade. And despite that, the United States government is simply lying to the public about the safeguards we've taken. You know, mad cow disease is spread through feeding cows, slaughterhouse waste from cows and other livestock. We hear that we have a firewall feed ban in the United States that has prevented this since 1997. The reality is, no, that's not the truth. It's just a labeling restriction, and legally, hundreds of millions of pounds of slaughterhouse waste are fed back to cattle every year. The cattle industry simply won't give it up because they make so much money by turning slaughterhouse waste into animal feed, but other countries have banned it and are stopping the spread of the disease that way.
And like, can we just take a question from a caller real quick? Sure. Because he's got some family in the cattle industry. Dan in Iowa?
Hey, Dan.
Hi. Well, okay. First, the one thing that I really wanted to say, of course Bush isn't doing anything about this because he doesn't do anything about anything.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we've got a pandering government. And,
uh-huh.
Well, okay.
Well, but you had some family in the cattle business?
Yeah, my parents own a ranch in Nebraska.
So now what's your comment in terms of, you know, whose responsibility is this? You must have been growing up with this stuff.
I grew up with this stuff. I never really saw the whole, like, bone meal, cattle waste, feeding it back to the cows thing. That's
but isn't
something that we did.
But isn't that just in, did you guys make all your own food for the cows, or wasn't that sort of a package thing? Oh, so you grew your own food, so you didn't feed your cows that bone meal waste. I was under the impression that this is something that you buy.
Oh, I'm sure it is. I mean, if it's coming from waste from the meatpacking plant, then maybe we should stop it at the meatpacking
plant. Let's get back on with our guest here in a second, Dan. Just tell me who you think the responsibility falls on as being somebody who was in the meat business.
Ultimately, well, okay, I think that better regulation could really help this.
Okay, so the FDA. All right, well, let's talk to John Stauber about that. John, you know, our caller was insinuating on some level that it's not a cattle rancher's necessarily the onus doesn't fall entirely on the cattle rancher. Some cattle ranchers, you know, feed their cattle properly. But what is the deal with, is this just cost effectiveness? They know that this type of feeding of blood and bone meal and chicken waste can cause this disease.
Yeah, it's simply cost effectiveness and the power of the Bush administration. They're getting away with simply lying to the press and public about what the situation is here. We keep hearing this mantra over and over. There is a firewall feed ban. We're not feeding this anymore. There's been a firewall feed ban since 97. That is a lie, and I don't use that word lightly. There are firewall feed bans that are effectively stopping the spread of mad cow disease, but they're in other countries. They're in Britain, Germany, France, Japan. Here, we are still, as I said, feeding legally hundreds of millions of pounds of slaughterhouse waste, including legally weaning calves on cattle blood and feeding cattle blood.
Oh, my God. That seems to, it just seems demonic.
It's insane because we know that blood spreads mad cow disease. That's why if you go to give blood and you've spent much time in Britain, they'll say, I'm sorry, we can't do that because your blood might be infected even though we can't detect it with mad cow disease. And in the last year, the British government has said they have two human mad cow disease deaths from people who picked up the disease, not from eating the meat, but they think from transfusions from people who ate the meat.
I got an email from this guy who said that, you know, that he had that same thing happen in the United States, that he went to get a blood test, and they said that, did you have anyone in your family with Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, or did you know anybody, and they wouldn't take his blood.
Right, that's the case. And if you've just spent time in Britain, they won't take your blood because you might have picked up the disease. And so here, you know, the big lie tactic, unfortunately, is working for this government at this time because the news media simply won't go beyond the government assertions and look at
the problem.
The fact is this feeding is going on, and the testing is a joke. Finally, thanks to the Inspector General's office in U.S. Consumers Union, the correct test, the Western blot test, has been done on this suspect cow from last November. And the scientific community has no doubt that this is indeed a case of mad cow that will be further confirmed. So we've got to take this.
They're not saying that. The Agriculture Department is not saying that. They're trying to make it seem like, we're checking still.
Absolutely, and it's, you know, they say it was a weak positive, which is sort of like saying, well, you know, she's a little pregnant.
Yeah.
It's and again, this is all spin, and what's very interesting, Mark, is it's actually the Food and Drug Administration that's in charge of these feed regulations that are so lax.
That's what our caller said.
You haven't heard a peep out of the Food and Drug Administration. What my sources tell me is that they've essentially been muzzled, the White House is in charge, and they're doing this as they want to do it, on behalf of the most powerful interests in the meat and livestock lobby.
Wow.
John Stauber, there are a lot of people who are paying attention to what are called downer cows. What is a downer cow, and are those the ones most susceptible to mad cow?
A downer cow is the type of cow that this most recent animal was. It's a cow that can't get up. They call it non-ambulatory. In the late stages of mad cow disease or human Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, the brain is riddled with holes and plaque, the cow or the person collapses, and then they die. But most of the while, during its infected life, a cow is going to be completely healthy or a person is going to be completely healthy. This downer stage only occurs towards the end. We have to start testing every animal in the United States before it's consumed. That's what they do in Britain, Germany, France, Japan.
Can it spread from cow to cow? Can it spread from cow to cow, John?
It's very difficult to spread it from cow to cow, like measles or mumps or something.
But just through the feed?
It's almost entirely spread through the feed, which is why the first thing to do is stop feeding animal protein to cattle. We refuse to do that in this country.
Okay.
We lie to the public about it.
Okay. Quickly, do you, how many suspected cases do you think there have been in the United States of human mad cow disease?
Well, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, we have to have an investigation to answer that question. The first person absolutely known to have died of human mad cow disease in the U.S. Died almost a year ago in Florida. But there are a lot of mysterious CJD deaths, such as this boy in Michigan last year. So we have to answer that, and the government is not investigating properly.
Thank you for joining us, John Stauber. The book is Mad Cow USA. It was really a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, Mark and Mark.
All right, you take care. I want to know the truth, but he's saying we can't get at the truth because they're stifling an investigation. The Food and Drug Administration is not taking the precautions they should. The beef industry is too powerful. Scary stuff.
Scaring the hell out of me.
Okay.
And I don't even eat red.
Coming up next, we got the Johnny K Street's going to come by. It's 47 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Mark Maron's mom, and you're listening to my son and his friend Mark Riley. They're very good boys. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
1-800-801-GAME. That's 1-800-801-GAME. Call now. 1-800-801-GAME.
Picture 2 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hiya.
Sarah America Radio's Morning Sedition. Good morning. You know, there are a lot of big stories in the news this week. So, hey, you know what time it is? It's time to get some bets down with our own Inside the Beltway odds maker, Johnny K Street. Johnny, where's the action, man?
Follows me, baby.
Hey, Johnny, I noticed when you walked in the studio, were you moonwalking or something?
You better believe it, Mark. You know, I like to place an occasional bet myself. Just amongst friends.
Right.
So I covered all my friends' action on the Michael Jackson show.
All right.
My brother-in-law, Johnny E Street, my uncle, Jackie E Street, my cousin, Frankie Fourth Avenue. They all bet me Michael Jackson was going to go away on a state-sponsored vacation.
Yeah.
I took the long shot.
Oh, yeah.
Not guilty on all counts.
Whoa.
That little freak made me a rich man. I was so happy when I heard that verdict, I made a donation to NAMBLA in his name.
No.
And I sent him a subscription to Boys Life just to show my regards.
Oh,
just a check.
Wow.
No big thing.
Okay.
I got a funny feeling this isn't the last money I'll be making on this guy.
All right. Michael Jackson is home taking apart his carousel and railroad. All right. Now, where's the new action this week, my friend? I'm ready to make some Al Franken-sized money. What do you got?
Downing Street Memo, baby.
All right.
The hottest action on the street.
Mm-hmm.
The Bush administration does not want you to hear about it. 50-1, ABC announces that they're doing a special on the Downing Street Memo. 1 minute into it, they switch over to a rerun of The Bachelor.
Come on. Really?
CNN decides to do a special on the Downing Street Memo, and their studio accidentally blows up when a Scud missile hits it. That's going off, so to speak, at 500-1.
I'll take it.
Diane Sawyer tries to do a special on Downing Street, but the CIA threatens to release a movie she made years ago when she was just a struggling college student called Getting It on the Air.
Oh, no.
I'll send you a copy. I give it a big thumbs up.
Oh, beautiful.
That's a solid bet, believe
I'll take it.
That's even money.
Oh, my God. Johnny, how many ways can we go on Downing Street? I want a Downing Street payoff.
You and me, baby. This is a hot bet. Now that John Kerry's making public statements about the Downing Street Memo and how it could lead to Bush's impeachment, 100-1. 100-1.
Okay.
Two of the Swift Boat veterans not only accuse Kerry of being a former member of the Viet Cong, they accuse him of getting him drunk on Jesus juice and taking advantage of him.
I'm going to put some money on both of those. You must have some Bush action, Johnny. What's the line on the impeachment, pal?
This is my favorite action
of
all right now. The line for Bush getting impeached within the next year is 100-1, but that action is changing all the time.
Yeah.
Baby. This guy's presidency is about as stable as Courtney Love standing on the San Andreas fault line. And speaking of Courtney Love, Bush could easily get deep throated by one of his own stooges any day now. 16-1 within the next year, they find somebody buried at Crawford Ranch with a rat in his mouth.
Yo, put me down for a yard on that.
Yeah, put me down for two, pal. That'll be the sweetest money I ever made.
You're both down. My bet of the week, 500-1, Trent Lott retires from the Senate due to an accident, which involves him getting drunk on moonshine and falling into a flaming cross at a rally and catching his Klan robe on fire.
Nice. Nice.
I'm out of here, folks. Right. I got to go to court.
Of
Thank you very much.
Thank right. you, Johnny.
I'm going to make you both rich men.
All right, hey. Be careful. Be careful, man. I hope things go well for your court there.
You know, some of the stuff he talks about actually seems to come true. It's starting to scare me, Johnny.
He's the prophet, man. The prophet. Oh, boy. You know, this is going to be a first. In a little while, we're going to Don Myrera is going to check in with us from Los Angeles. Very funny guy. I worked with him for years, too. Now, let me ask you something. You weren't here during the... What did you think the Michael Jackson turnout was going to be? What did you think that the charges were going to happen?
I thought it was going to be a split verdict. I thought he would be found innocent on the major counts, guilty on a couple of, you know, serving alcohol.
That's what I thought.
But it was a clean slate. They knocked it out of the park. And you know what that was? That was Michael Jackson convincing 12 people to see his vision of reality. That's all that was.
And can you be candid with me here? I mean, do you think that he's guilty?
No.
Okay.
I think that Michael Jackson, see, because I know people, you know, some of the people that
mentored
me.
We're just talking about this because I haven't talked to you
about
it.
I know. Some of the people that mentored me know him and have known him since he was a kid. He has really, really never grown up. He's got this Peter Pan. He literally, I believe, has a Peter Pan complex.
So he's got a problem in his head.
He's got a problem in his head, but he also believes that there's nothing wrong, and I still think he believes this, that there's nothing wrong with bedding down young boys as long as there's no sex going on.
That's what my father said. Yeah. I mean, I guess there's something wrong with me because, you know, I assumed that I really did. I assumed that he was guilty. I expected the worst, you know, only in the sense that, you know, I judged, I guess. But a lot of people feel the same way you do, and it's hard for me to wrap my brain around it because my dad's the same way. He's like, who knows? This guy just got this problem.
And it is a problem, and therein is the difficulty for him because he doesn't see it as a problem. He hasn't seen it as a problem. He'd rather pay $20 million to one kid than to admit it was a problem.
All right, man. Well, you know, we'll see what happens. You think he's going to leave the country?
I do.
As I said before, comedian Don Irera will join us. He'll be at Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrouck Heights, New Jersey this Saturday night. Very funny guy. I've known him for years.
All right, and we've got Peggy Lipton coming up, the Mod Squad Woman, here on Air.
Six past the hour, it's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. Good morning, Mark Riley.
Good morning, Mark Maron.
Wow, I'll tell you, when you were talking about mad cow disease, that got the emails going, man.
Really?
Flying in. Some guy says, as a neuropsychologist who worked in a state psychiatric hospital through the 90s, we had a couple of CJD, Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease patients. They go fast, but they may have contracted this whilst romping around the world, but I've stopped eating beef.
Wow.
You know, but a lot of people respond to this because this is one of those... This is one of those situations where you've got the Department of Agriculture sort of obfuscating, you know, putting up a sort of like a spin, sort of like we're saying we got one mad cow, maybe we tested in November, we sent the brain to England to be, you know, to see if it's really got mad cow. There's no real, nothing to worry about. They're saying things like, you know, this is not going to affect our relationship with exporting beef to Japan. Like, hell, it's not.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, it's something to be frightened of because there's no reason to trust big corporations, especially ones that are so deeply in bed with this government who only operates on the behest of corporations. And the last thing corporations care about and the last thing this government in a lot of ways cares about are everyday people's lives.
Here's my question. Yeah. I mean, you know, let's say for the sake of argument, I like and I still do love the smell of hamburger.
Uh-huh.
I may not eat it anymore, but I still love the smell of it. What are people going to do to make sure that the beef they eat was not fed anything, any of this slaughterhouse.
Yeah, for those of you who are just tuning in, the main cause of the mad cow in cows is eating other cows in one form or another.
Blood, bones.
And they claimed, our guest said, to have put firewalls up to stop this from happening, but it hasn't stopped. It's a cost-effective thing that they do. They just feed it back. They just put blood back. He said they were nursing cows on blood.
On blood.
And that's how this disease is transmitted.
Turning cows into Dracula.
It's horrible.
It is awful.
It's a cost-effective device that these guys are using at the cost of people's lives, potentially. And this is what corporations do. It happens with car companies. It happens with a lot of different companies. They cut corners as long as they can get away with it. And I suspect that this thing is going to blow up. I think this is going to be a huge cover-up. I think because the symptoms are so similar to Alzheimer's, I'm just petrified of it, to tell you the truth. And I don't have any faith in the FDA to hold up their end of the stick anymore because they're goons, they're stooges. Just for the government.
Do they have, like, organic beef? I mean, is there
some corporation, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, is there a way that you could go someplace and say, look, I want organic or I want beef?
Of course, of course.
I don't know. I maybe they don't.
I'm
maybe
not yelling at you. I'm just saying, of course there is. But, you know, the truth of the matter is we should be able to have faith in the institutions that are put in place to protect us.
Oh, yeah, and I'm sure the organic probably costs about $9 a pound, too.
Oh, yeah, switching gears. You remember this tune? Speaking from the Senate floor during a special late-night session, Senator Bill Frist disputed Schiavo's doctor's diagnosis of persistent vegetative state. Now, they did an autopsy on Terry Schiavo yesterday. And this is what Frist said when he was looking at the tape of her. Quote, I question it based on a review of the video footage, which I spent an hour or so looking at last night in my office. He said in a lengthy speech in which he quoted medical texts and standards. Quote, she certainly seems to respond to visual stimuli. Now, the autopsy has proven that she had less than half a brain in her head from all this brain damage. Which means that her husband was right, the doctors were right, the pathologist said that it was irrecoverable, quote, irrecoverable, and no amount of treatment or rehabilitation would have reversed it, unquote. She wouldn't have been able to eat and drink even if they had poured it into her mouth. She probably would have asphyxiated. She died of dehydration. And given her brain damage in a certain region of the brain, it was almost entirely certain that she were blind. So Bill Frist not only fails as a doctor, but he fails as a representative of the people in his pandering to religious fanatics who wanted to martyr this woman. And they say it was about life. No, it wasn't. It was about you trying to depict her as a functioning person. And also it was about, one of our senators, usurping or overseeing, superseding states' rights and trying to put a government feeding tube into someone's family. Against the wishes of the victim.
Not only that, Mark, there's a common thread here with some of the other stories that we've been dealing with today. And it's the whole notion that it's not enough to say, all right, we take issue with, people's notion that the woman is in a persistent vegetative state. They accuse the woman's husband of being some kind of monster. They demonize this guy just like the religious right demonizes gays when they oppose gay marriage. It's not enough just to be opposed. You have to go out and try and crush the person that opposes.
Crucify somebody.
Yeah, and Michael Schiavo went through a living hell. He was an adulterer. He was a potential. Remember now, these were people that were standing up in the halls of Congress and in the courts of public opinion saying over and over and over again, Michael Schiavo might well have assaulted his wife, and that's what caused her to be vegetarian.
And the autopsy ruled out that possibility, almost diminished it entirely, the possibility that she went into a coma as a result of strangulation, beating, drug overdose, even an eating disorder, which everyone assumed, which she had, but there's been no proof of it. But she lost a lot of weight. They said there's no chance that it was a heart defect. They're attributing the potassium imbalance that caused people to think that it came from an eating disorder to either too much coffee and being too newly thin, or perhaps from the epinephrine that was used to revive her in the ER. The point is that they tried to make a martyr out of this poor woman, and the Schindlers, her parents, should have a special room in hell for crucifying somebody else, in the name of these religious fanatics. The government, obviously. Our government is awful. Tom DeLay Frist, the president, even the president's brother, to try and intercede, you know, to just impose themselves on this family when, you know, the husband knew what she wanted.
Well, yeah, and remember now, they all flew back right around Easter time. Do people forget that they called a special session of Congress and Bush flew in from Crawford to sign the piece of legislation that would have reinserted Terry Schiavo's feeding tube?
Well, you know, it seems to me that a lot of the Republicans and the GOP is getting a little fed up with this administration, obviously because, you know, elections are coming up for them, and the general tide in the population is that this administration is failing in so many ways the people of this country, as best I can see. The provisions of the Patriot Act vote was voted down in the House today. Bush's effort to expand provisions of the Patriot Act went down 238 to 187, and that's not a small margin. That's not two votes. That means a lot of Republicans said, look, you know, this is too much. You know, you're giving too much power to the government, and we shouldn't be, you know, watching, you know, be able to get our library records and our bookstore purchases.
One word describes this. Yeah. Rebuke. The Congress of the United States, the House of Representatives, Republican majority House of Representatives, turn around and slap Bush upside the head over trying to promote, and by the way, by inference, too, Alberto Gonzalez, because he's the one that came up on the Hill and argued in favor of extending these particularly noxious provisions of the Patriot Act.
And certainly around the war in Iraq, there's been a lot of dissent in terms of the GOP in relation to an exit strategy. You've got, well, you know, one of our guys, Russell Feingold, called us yesterday. He's introduced a Senate measure calling on Bush to lay out an exit strategy. A similar action is requested by the guy who came up with Freedom Fries, Representative Walter Jones in North Carolina. Representative Ron Jones, a Republican from Texas, has signed on to that one. John Conyers is convening a forum today on the Downing Street memos. Apparently, we're not sure whether it's going to be in the Capitol, but we do know that it is going to be on C-SPAN.
Yes, C-SPAN 3 at 2:30 this afternoon, folks.
Some active duty officers are saying that the military action will not end the insurgency. There's a tremendous amount of bad news, you know, out of Iraq in the last couple of days. 50 people were killed, which is unbelievable. It is unbelievable how out of control it is going there.
You know, it's starting to get scary, Mark, because we're not even hearing accurate counts of the number of Americans that are getting killed. It's almost as though that comes with the news and it comes and goes just as quickly as anything else. Now we've got over 1,700 U.S. lives lost, and there is no end in sight. The Republicans know it. The Bush administration knows it. And now, hopefully, some of the American people that supported this war, supported this president, also are starting to understand what's going on here.
Wow. Okay, I think it's time for a little comedy, huh? It's 15 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark. Dom Irrera will be here with us. Stay with us.
Hello, this is Mick Foley, professional wrestler and best-selling author, and you're listening to the two guys who give the right wing the smackdown. It's Mark Maron and Mark Riley with Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Wait for 30 days. Call now, 1-800-900-2657. That's 1-800-900-2657.
Twenty past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Welcome aboard. I can't wait to talk to my buddy Dom. Los Angeles Magazine calls our next guest one of the 10 funniest people in L.A. He will be performing at Bananas in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey this Saturday. Shows at 8 p.m. and 10:30 p.m. For ticket information and reservations, call 201-727-1090 or go to bananascomedyclub.com. You've seen him on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, The Late Show with David Letterman, The Late Night with the Conan O'Brien, The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. He made several appearances on Oprah. Dom Irrera, is that true? Oprah?
First of all, I feel like I got to do a set now. you know what's funny about the number, the 10 funniest people in L.A.?
Yeah.
Now nobody's ever satisfied in life. It's like somebody, a friend of mine calls me up and he goes, Kathy Griffin was ahead of me in the list.
She
goes, you're funnier than Kathy Griffin.
Yeah.
That's a big point. You know? So, would you ask me, Mark, about Oprah?
Well, you know, I didn't know you were on Oprah. I didn't know these things.
I was on Oprah a couple times, actually. Did some thing about trying to help people through laughter, therapy through laughter. We went out to, I had this one girl that
She had a fear of spaghetti.
Oh, God.
She had a fear because when she was a kid, she had braces.
Yeah.
She used to dream that she would eat spaghetti and wrap around her head and strangle it.
Oh,
come on.
That's a normal fear.
Yeah, sure.
Anyway, I just called her, you know, I basically tortured her and told her she was a wuss. I think I got her so emotional.
Yeah.
It lost the fear of spaghetti and just started being afraid of me. How you been, man?
I'm all right, dude. Did you go to Ireland this year? You might go every year. Did you
yeah,
go?
They were all asking for you.
They were, really?
No, not really. But I like you.
Yeah, I know you do. We had a good time. We went, let me tell the audience, we go to Kilkenny sometimes to do the Kilkenny festival, the comedy festival. I had a great time that one. They wanted me to come this year, but I'm doing this.
Yeah, he told me. I was hoping you would come here. Richard Cook told me, actually, that you were going to, you know, you had a chance, but... congratulations
yeah.
on the show.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, I remember being in Ireland and sitting there. It was just me and you at breakfast eating
yeah.
weird food, blood pudding and porridge. And I was sitting there going, I don't think they're going to like me.
That's a lonely moment, huh?
Yeah.
Eating their bacon.
Yeah.
Their healthy
thick,
breakfast.
Yeah, the thick bacon and the beans.
Would you like more fat with your fat? You've got a side of fat with that main course, Kamalar.
Oh, was it good this year?
Yeah, it's really fun. I mean, it's amazing to me. You know, it's like I go to Letterkenny.
Yeah.
Right? It's in Donegal. This is after with Kevin Meaney, who I love Kevin Meaney. He's still closing his act with We Are the World.
I know.
And I go, Kevin, wait to keep your finger in the pulse of what's happening today in music. What about that John Philip Sousa and that parade music? He was wild. We had so much fun, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just amazed at the power of television. These kids are sitting up there, 17 years old.
Yeah.
I go, what are you doing here? The guy goes, hey, I came to see you. I go, you know me?
Yeah.
You know, it's like.
Yeah. They get you on, the Showtime and stuff?
CBC and CBC.
Isn't that wild? You got a whole fan base out there?
Well, especially like 17-year-old Irish kids.
Yeah.
He was doing impressions of a celebrity's dog. First of all, I think it's time to drop the impression all the people are dead.
Yeah.
And these kids, he's doing like Rod Serling and Art Carney.
Oh.
You know, I mean, kids here wouldn't even know them. He's funny.
Are you looking forward to coming to New Jersey, man?
Oh, you know, bananas, man.
Yeah.
That's what always keeps me, you know, first of all, I love the club, but I love the fact that there's no way around it. You got to lose a little dignity when you're playing bananas.
Yeah, why?
No, just the name of the club.
Yeah, I know. I get it.
Hey, how you doing, man? Good. Hey, things are going well, huh? Yeah, where you at this week? Bananas. Hey, I'll see you later.
Yeah.
But actually, that's when I knew I kind of made it a little in the business.
Yeah.
I pull into the Lincoln Tunnel.
Yeah.
And I go to pay the toll, and a woman says to me, a beautiful black woman with dreadlocks.
Yeah.
And she gets my money, and then she hands it back to me.
Yeah.
And she goes, it's on me. I saw you at the banana club. You
got a free tunnel ride.
It's bucks.
Tunnel, man.
Yeah.
So what's did you do anything about this whole Michael Jackson thing?
Well, you know, the problem with the Michael Jackson, I did some stuff.
Yeah.
But the hard thing is they beat it to death. It's like doing Monica Lewinsky jokes at this point.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, one thing I did that kind of got a mixed reaction was because I taught the kid.
Mm-hmm.
I taught that kid in comedy class, and I didn't remember him. But
which kid?
The kid who you know...
claimed to be molested?
Which is the kid with the cancer, yeah.
Oh, my God, really?
Yeah,
oh, wow.
I mean, I don't know if you ever saw the kid. He's really hot.
Yeah.
Really, you know, I used to call him Buns of Steel.
Oh, no. So you're saying that maybe who the hell knows? So how's L.A., man? I haven't been there in a year. I've been doing this.
L.A.'s good. Well, you know, I mean, I really actually wish I could live here.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm on the road so much.
Yeah. I miss you, man. I used to see you like a couple of times. I went over to Laugh Factory, and I listened to you talk for a long time.
Mark, I remember when you talked for a long time without a laugh. I used to like your speeches on stage. You know, you weren't like a lot of those other comedians that pandered to the crowd by going for the laugh. You made a point. You actually preached.
Yeah. Well, yeah, a lot of people don't know this, though. I remember, like, they have a new improv. You started originally in New York at the old improv.
Yeah,
first time I saw you was like a little picture. You looked like you were 12 in those pictures at the improv that used to be up over there.
God, I was cute.
Oh, yeah, you were. You remember the old days? You miss the old New York?
You know, I had enough of it. I mean, I'm always more L.A. And I know it's not hip because, It's like people never ask me, like, that they would want me to be happy. They go, you like L.A.? What happened to you? I get, like, anxiety attacks in New York. I mean, my hands, I can't go out during the day there.
It's too much?
Yeah, it's too much stimuli for
yeah.
me. I can't take it. So in that sense, L.A. is better because where I live in the hills with my other celebrity friends,
yeah.
with my other D-acts, I live at the bottom of the hill. Still above some people. That's what I care about.
All right, Tom, look, have a great show this weekend. Thanks for waking up and talking to us.
Thank you, Mark. Take care of the other Mark.
Okay,
all right, take care, Tom.
I will. That was Tom Irera. He's going to be at Bananas in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey this Saturday. Shows at 8 p.m. and 10:30 p.m. 201-727-1090 or go to bananascomedyclub.com. I'll be there on June 25th. I'm excited. I've never been there before. And that'd be fun.
This is your first time, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dom and Mark are both going to hell. Me? I have nothing to do with what just took place here.
He's one of those guys. Like
he's a funny guy.
He's like a father to me. I remember him when I just started out. All right, so we're going to come back. We got Peggy Lipton, if you remember the Mod Squad.
Squad!
So stay with us. That's coming up here on Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
How righteous we are. We have to show those liberal hippies.
Jerry Springer on Air America Radio.
What, are you going to play the whole thing? 34 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
I'm leaving, man. You give me flashbacks.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I vaguely remember that.
Oh, I very clearly remember that.
Well, our guest was the hippie chick. Can I say that?
Sure.
On TV's The Mod Squad, she played Norma the Waitress in David Lynch's Twin Peaks.
Stop.
She was, what?
You got characters all mixed up.
What do you mean? Huh? You were Norma the Waitress in David Lynch's...
But I thought you were saying that as the hippie chick.
No. I actually, in my intro, I just have hippie chick. I don't have a name for the hippie chick.
Julie.
Okay, let me try it again. Here we go. She was Julie the hippie chick in the TV's The Mod Squad. She played Norma the Waitress in David Lynch's Twin Peaks. She was married to music mogul Quincy Jones and writes about her life as an actress, wife, and mother in her new book, Breathing Out. Please welcome Peggy Lipton. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for having me here.
I'm glad you're here. You look great. You sound great. It was nice talking to you on the break already. I'm excited to talk to you right now. It's going to happen. So I got to look at this picture on the back of the book. So that would be the hippie chick.
That's the hippie chick.
Now, you were in Hollywood in the 60s.
Yes.
What was that like? It must have been crazy. Was it fun?
It was fabulous.
That's all you wrote about that in your book. Like,
I did. I wrote a little bit about it. I start when I was born, but mm-hmm. I wrote a little bit about it. It wasn't even so much Hollywood. It wasn't a focus on Hollywood
yeah.
because I didn't really fall into that group.
Uh-huh.
It was more about what the movement was, what the music was.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It was a pretty exciting time.
Drugs, sex,
rock and roll.
Is that all in the book? It is, right?
Yeah.
Paul McCartney. Did you go out with Paul McCartney?
Uh-huh.
And what was that like? Was he kind of boring? Kind of, be honest.
No, you'd probably find him boring now, but he certainly wasn't boring then. He was the most wanted, attractive guy on the planet.
But he was like the adorable Beatle. Why didn't you go for the angry Lennon Beatle?
Scary.
He was busy.
Lennon was scary? Was he?
Well, he wasn't very, I mean, to me, listen, I didn't know them well at all. I met them, I was 18 years old.
Okay.
It was like, it was a dream come true. But I have a little piece in the book about, you know, meeting John. And one of my reviews said after they read it, they went, yeah, you know, he probably took one look at you and said, you know, please, why is she here? And that's exactly what he said.
Really?
Why is she here? Yeah.
Wow.
Because I was at dinner with them and I was the only girl and it was like, you know, why?
Oh, really? Yeah. What's it? Who brought the chick?
Now, you know, I was a teenager when The Mod Squad came out, and it was one of those television series that had a profound effect, I think, on people because it was really the first televised expression of youth culture that was going on during that time. Did you feel like you were breaking new ground as you were? It's interesting because my brother was a good friend of Clarence Williams's for a number of years. And New Gloria Foster and all those folks. And I just remember that it was, as people watched it, I mean, people would criticize it for this or that and the fact that you were cops. I mean, that was part of it.
Right.
But people also felt you were breaking new ground. Did you?
I think at some point we did. It was a little different for us because we were on a Hollywood soundstage, and that was sort of our life for 5 years. However, we went out on the streets about 3 days a week. So we always had contact with either fans or, you know, what was going on. And but I think we did know, but then we sort of had to look at it also as professionals. Now we were paid actors and we were kind of in the limelight and we couldn't necessarily associate in the same way. Like, I had done all that partying before, actually.
Uh-huh. Before Mod Squad.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I just remember his name was Link, right?
Link, yeah.
Oh, and that, it's weird because I was really young. If you were a teenager,
well, Clarence Williams was a trained stage actor.
Absolutely.
I mean, he had done some really great work here in New York, and then had gone out to California to do this role.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was the first time that they had a black guy with an afro ever in the history of television.
But real, it was a real afro, man. It was
it wasn't fake. That was his hair, I believe.
The only other, co-star or star was on TV at the time was Bill Cosby.
Bill Cosby and I Spy. He had a short. He had a full body.
Yeah, he had
not
short
a big
too,
afro.
But no, but and Link's afro actually grew and grew as you watched the show.
So weird, because that's what I remember about it. There's something about the Mod Squad in my brain as being very young that I just found it. I thought it was the represent. That was like big city life to me in my head. And I even remember when you started to get involved with Quincy Jones and it was in the papers and stuff. I think in my head you were actually the first interracial couple that I remember seeing. Is that possible? What year was that?
That was 72.
Wow.
I met him in 72.
So I was.
But I mean, there were others before us. I mean, you know, we weren't the only one.
Right, but I think in my consciousness,
but 72,
I was nine.
It was still tough. It was still
absolutely
tough in those days. I mean, there were still people that would stare. And I'm not talking about in Mississippi. They would stare in L.A., right?
You got it. Exactly. I've been trying to explain this on my...
I'm sure that in some places they still stare now, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I was trying to explain this. You know, it was like, how was it? Well, we lived an insulated life and sort of, you know, it was a little bit different. It was Hollywood. There was a lot more acceptance. But it still was... Every time we went out, it was still the stare. And there's an incident in my book that I wrote, because I didn't want to get into it too much, because that would have been a whole book. But I remember driving one night. He didn't drive. Quincy didn't drive. And I was driving the car one night in Beverly Hills about 10 o'clock. And we got stopped by the cops. And I couldn't understand why. I was a really good driver. And the cop looked in the window, shone the flashlight, and asked for IDs. And then he said, he looked at my driver's license, and he said to Quincy, "What's her middle name?"
Oh, wow. Really?
Why would I? What, am I missing something? Why would he ask that?
Because he didn't believe. He thought Quincy had abducted her. That's why.
Oh, my God. Yep. We're talking to Peggy Lipton. The book is Breathing Out. We're talking about her marriage to Quincy Jones. And how long, what were some other incidents like that in Hollywood? Do you remember any outstanding, like not just staring, but where you were treated badly with Quincy?
I just remember once that I got out of control at a hotel because
what do you mean?
Well, because I started to resent it after a while.
Okay.
I needed to know how to be cool, but the main reason why I was cool was for him, because I knew if he got set off in any way, you know, he was going to lose it. He's the one who had to, he'd been black all his life, so he was the one who sort of had to suffer for all of it. So I just had to be very, very cool. But one day at a hotel, when I picked up on exactly why we were getting picked on and talked down to, I went nuts. And it was actually at the Plaza Hotel in New York. And Quincy said to me, he saw it, because I'd never gotten mad. And he went, "Baby, please. Please don't go there. I beg you." And I shut up. But I really could have lost. I don't even know what that means. But I know we felt it. But I wouldn't say it was the overall, you know, feeling in our lives, because we didn't put ourselves out in those situations too much. We had our family. We had our home.
Mm-hmm. And you had the music business. I mean, the music business, I assume, was just a little bit more accepting. And
much
he was,
more, actually.
Yeah. I mean, he was pretty much at the top of his game at this point in terms of, you know, being a major producer. I know he came out of Seattle, right? He was a horn player. I forgot who it was that he played with.
Didn't you see the movie Ray?
Yeah, he's my head. Exactly. Yeah. Even Ray, because he was Ray's very good friend, but he played with Lionel Hampton.
Lionel Hampton, yeah. And I mean, was it for you, did you get a chance to experience the whole music aspect? I mean, did you go to the studios? Did you watch him work and that sort of thing?
Absolutely.
Really?
That was so thrilling for me. He, you know, when we met, he already scored like 50 films.
Mm-hmm.
He had already been a record executive. He had produced people like Sarah Vaughan, Ella. He had had a big hit with Leslie Gore with It's My Party.
It's My Party.
Yeah.
And I'll Cry If I Want To.
Yeah, exactly. So he was already a pop producer, but never on the level that he reached with Michael Jackson. But I went to all his sessions. And in fact, I traveled with him to Japan twice. And because I didn't want to sit backstage, I joined the band.
Really?
What did you play?
I sang.
Oh, that's it.
I sang. With James Ingram and Patty Austin.
Oh, Patty Austin. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you got to see it real close.
Oh, yeah. I was on stage.
How did the thing with Twin Peaks happen for you?
I basically got a call that there was a new series, and I read the script, and I thought it was wild. And when I went in for the interview, which it was just an interview, not an audition, it was a desk this big, and there was David Lynch and the producer, Mark Frost, and there was nothing on the desk except my picture.
Mm.
So somewhere in their head, they had decided that I was not.
You were the one.
Mm-hmm.
And that was touted as a big comeback. How long had it been since you did TV?
I had worked up until then.
Oh, really?
But the kinds of things I did were really, you know, better left unknown, unsaid, unknown, all of it. It was bad. But, you know, so it was... It was a comeback in the sense that I was again doing a TV series.
Uh-huh. And a freaky one, and a very cutting-edge TV series, and a cult popular... It's a cult.
Look, I watched Eraserhead 5 times before I even started to understand what he was saying in that. So,
understand that?
Yeah, man.
You understand Eraserhead?
That and Greaser's Palace were the two densest movies I've ever seen in my entire life.
What was Greaser's Palace?
Greaser's Palace was Robert Downey Sr.'s follow-up to Putney Swope.
I saw Putney Swope.
The one with the guy in the zoot suit who played Jesus Christ. Mm. They told the story of Jesus Christ, only he was in a zoot suit, and he was actually traveling through the Old West. Yeah. It was a very
good.
So our guest has been Peggy Lipton. The book is Breathing Out, and you cover a lot of stuff in here. You cover a personal struggle with cancer.
Absolutely.
You cover your family. You have daughters. What do your daughters do?
My youngest is an actress, mm-hmm, who's now in a new TV series for TNT, and of all weird things, her boss is Aaron Spelling.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And she was on Chappelle's show, too?
Okay. That's her favorite show. We're hoping that all comes, you know, we're all hoping that
what's
that
going
comes
on
back
with Dave?
I think you know as much as we do.
Well, look, Peggy Lipton, thanks for joining us.
Thank
good luck
so
with
much
the book. It was
no,
great talking to you. We're going to come back. I think we've got one of our favorite callers is on the phone.
Uh-oh.
It's 45 past the hour. Stay tuned for that.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
1984. That's 444-1984. 1-800-444-1984.
Nine past the hour. Let's land this thing, Riley.
Yeah.
It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. What?
I'm sorry to bother you, buddy,
but
we have the guy from Teabag or Pusa.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, the revolutionary guy.
Yeah.
Pondero.
Pondero.
Hey, man, good to hear from you. So, hey, buddy, you still calling yourself Pendejo?
See, Mark, I still have the tattoo. I will forever be Pendejo.
Oh. Okay, good, buddy, good. So you've decided to stick with this whole Latin revolutionary angle. How's the thing going? You know, you like to say
the revolution.
Why are you whispering, buddy?
Mark, I'm not really in a place where I can yell. For you see, I am in jail.
Wow, Pendejo, congratulations. Going to jail is something that happens to all revolutionaries. I think you're finally getting this thing. What'd you do, stage a protest, have a sit-in, burn an effigy? Why were you arrested, man?
Well, Mark,
yeah.
As you know, the Puerto Rican Day Parade was held this weekend in New York City. And I, Pendejo, have become a folk hero of sorts to the Latin American community. I knew Mis Hermanos would want me to attend.
Okay, so what happened?
Well, I put a little Puerto Rican flag bandana on Stompers.
Your shih tzu.
Who cannot be left alone.
The
And we march to Fifth Avenue. We enter the sea of working class men and women, my comrades, the oppressed, the exploited, many of whom were so poor they could only afford half of a shirt.
No. All right, okay. All right, so get to it, man. What'd you get arrested for?
It was a very hot day, Mark. Fortunately, a young man named Luis saw my pendejo tattoo and offered me a pull from his flask, which contained a rather exhilarating elixir he referred to as tequila.
Wow. Never had that before, have you? Have you, pendejo? Huh? I think I see where this is going, but go ahead. Keep going.
The temperature kept rising,
yeah.
And I had failed to wear a hat and sunblock, as my dermatologist had suggested.
Oh, so you get sunburn, huh?
To say the least, Mark. I'm quite pale, and within 1 hour I began to get dizzy. My vision blurred. Blisters were forming on my skin.
Oh.
Stompers was frightened, barking at me. Soon I was reeling. Having lost my equilibrium, I was staggering into Mis Hermanos, and according to the police reports, also Mis Hermanas.
Oh, no, wait, you didn't. What happened?
In the final moments of my freedom, I apparently slipped in a puddle of my own sick. In an effort to steady myself, I reached for the shoulders of a woman, but missed.
Oh, and instead you... Oh, dude, that's called groping.
Yes, that's what the police said.
Oh, no.
Her boyfriend, however, who I guess you could say questioned me before the police arrived, spoke mostly with his fists. He kept beating me, even though I screamed the name of my revolutionary group. Puta! Puta! Puta!
Yeah, yeah. Your name of your group is the People's...
Underground Threat Alliance.
Oh, okay. So you went to the Puerto Rican Day Parade, you got drunk, you got sunstroke, you stumbled into some girl and grabbed her rack, and then you got your ass beat, and then you got arrested. I'm so proud of you. Today, you are a man, pendejo.
Thank you, Mark. And I'm sure the policia are gloating over the fact they have the famous pendejo in their custody.
Oh, so why are you still there, man? The parade was on Sunday. That was like days ago.
Yes, Mark, I'm afraid I'll be a harder, more dangerous man by the time I get out. But a steep bail is the chain that tethers me to this animal factory.
Steep bail, huh? How much is bail for the infamous revolutionary pendejo?
It's actually more of a processing fee, $50, but I don't have it.
All right, dude. I'll come down and get you after the show, all right, buddy? You deserve it.
I'll pay you back. I have a savings bond.
I'm not counting on it.
And we can swing by the animal shelter to pick up Stompers on the way. I'm sure she's worried sick.
All right, but we're not hanging out, all right? This is just a ride, man.
Thank you, Mark. I have to go, though. A cellmate has offered to tattoo Puta on my other arm.
Oh.
Viva la revolucion!
All right.
Putas and pendejos, what are we doing here?
Well, you know, it's not us.
I understand.
He's got a plan for the future, my friend.
Mm-hmm.
A plan! So, dude, I'm not going to be here tomorrow. Is that sad?
I am saddened by the fact that you will not be here tomorrow.
But, you know,
we decided to...
You and Wayne Gelman.
Wayne Gelman.
How is that going to be?
News Daddy.
You and Wayne Gelman going to be kicking it out here tomorrow.
That's right. I don't know how that's going to work. But
dude, I know how it's going to work. There's going to be some stories told and a lot of this. Oh, no, not that one.
Yeah. Hi, welcome to BET.
Yeah, you get some good guests.
Greg Lopresto will be here.
Yes.
Brendan and Passman will be here.
Yeah.
So if Gelman tanks, we'll bring them in. I'm not worried.
No, it's all going to be great.
Gelman tanks.
Yeah.
That's right.
I think that's going to happen.
Hey, he's
like,
News Daddy.
You don't have to worry about News Daddy tanking.
Oh, here he comes. All right.
You want to come plug yourself for you?
Hey, do you have the theme from Shaft?
Please.
You looking forward to this, Wayne? You gonna...
Yes, sir. I'm truly honored. I don't know who's responsible for it, but it's good to know that we work for a liberal network where two blacks can anchor the morning show.
That's right. Right.
That was dripping. Dripping with sarcasm.
That's
that
right.
I got...
We shall overcome. How do you like me now?
So you guys are going to have fun tomorrow.
Where's DMC? Is he coming in tomorrow?
Sure.
No.
We're going to bring Sharpton in.
Oh, yeah. Boy.
Yeah, that's and he'll never leave.
Play the morning edition radio theater for him. Tell him, have him fill in those lines on the morning edition radio theater.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, did you clear that with him before you?
I read it as I saw it. Passed and handed me a script.
He didn't know.
Blame it on the white man.
Okay, blame it on the white man. Okay, the Iceman defense. I was only following orders.
That's it.
All right, you guys. All right, so have fun tomorrow, fellas.
was.
Yeah.
All right. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. But now I'm sorry I'm not going to be here. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. A meeting of U.S. bishops will avoid the issue of gay priests. The bishop said it's hard enough recruiting men that are willing to work on Sundays. We can't be that fussy. When one bishop said emphatically that the issue would not be discussed, another bishop replied, oh, pretty Princess Pointy Hat's feeling bitchy today, isn't she, girl? Bush's tax cuts has made rich senators even richer. Big surprise here. Majority Leader Bill Frist earned between $1 million to $5 million in income from the W.H. Frist 2000 Qualified Blind Trust. Blind trust? Wasn't that also his campaign slogan? Yeah. Alabama says a smart joke. Alabama's two senators say they did not co-sponsor the anti-lynching resolution because they didn't know about it. How prevalent was lynching in Alabama? Records show the state's Boy Scouts routinely led the nation in the number of merit badges for knot tying. Today's phrase just dropped this in the conversation. Senators benefiting from tax cuts, the rich getting richer, the poor voting for them. Wake up, sheeple. Take that $300 check and buy a $200 Clue.
Ooh.
Spend the rest on trim spa. You're fat and complacent, America. Well, wow, Riley, you guys have fun tomorrow.
Hey, man, I'm going to miss you tomorrow, man. News said it's going to be here. Tom Robbins from the Village Voice will be here. He's going to talk about that stadium fiasco, and he's going to name some names. And I understand that Cardinal Milkington may be paying us a visit as well.
Yes.
Marin, we've had a great deal of fun here this morning. We're going to do it all again when we get back. When are you getting back?
I'll be back Tuesday, my friend.
Tuesday. We'll do it then on Air America Radio.